Hello, Gemini, and welcome to The Awakening, your 2025-26 reading. I'm here today with a kind of a rephrasing or a summary of what I learned writing your written reading, and also a special focus on profession, vocation, career-related stuff as we take this next step going deeper into the digital age. Just FYI, environmentally, it is about 3 degrees Fahrenheit outside, and there is no humidity. My lungs are feeling it, so I am not working with 100% capacity, so I'm going to take it slow and take it easy, which will probably work given the highly energetic nature of your astrology doesn't really need very much in the way of extra emphasis. And I will begin by saying that just generally, this is likely to be the most interesting year in quite a long time. By year, I mean a span from about now out till about mid-2026. So it's kind of like an 18-month year that we are in, and I suggest considering the events in that kind of a time frame. There is an increasing emphasis in the air signs, which there has not been for quite a while. There's been some, mostly coming out of Libra, and some minor planet activity in Gemini, but now we are about to be living with Uranus entering Gemini, which is going to have a profound effect on everyone in terms of an acceleration effect. And meanwhile, in Gemini, there was a transition of Sedna into your sign, which completed in 2024. And this is, I've been jokingly saying now it's finally not the 60s anymore, because Sedna was the last remaining holdover of 1960s astrology, Sedna in Taurus. I think it went in 66 and took all those years to clear your 12th house Gemini, 12th house Taurus. Now, I have a lot to say about Uranus entering your sign, but I want to talk about the subtler influence of Sedna. Sedna grants a kind of environmental sensitivity. This is very important right now. In assessing the world, I think commentators of all kinds, including astrologers, overemphasize figure and de-emphasize the ground. The ground is the source, like the dirt is the source of the plants that grow, and the air kind of is a form of ground, sunshine is a form of ground, and the plants are the figure, but really, without the ground, particularly the earth itself, we wouldn't have anything growing. And so this is why, that's kind of the logic of being sensitive to your environment. And what Sedna's gift is, I think, after having now thought about Sedna for about 23 years, is sensitivity to the invisible environment. It's kind of a probe. And when things are moving very fast, and when there is so much going on in the world and in certain facets of your life that it's not possible to analyze everything, your I was going to say fallback position, but I think it's much more important than that. Primary orientation, I would suggest, should be environmental sensitivity. Environmental sensitivity means paying attention to what would seem to be, most of the time, completely invisible, outside the realm of normal perception, outside the realm of the senses, unless a special technique or special instrument in terms of science, but a special mental technique, an approach, a psychic approach to existence is used. And this can start with simply tuning into what is normally tuned out by the senses. A lot of things are invisible and inaudible and outside of perception because of a loss of contact with the senses. And in our time, a lot of thought forms, ideas, an endless stream of articles coming out, gazillion 3-hour podcasts with expert panels of basically no one stands in clouds, crowds, the thing that we need, which is to be paying attention to what our senses deliver. One simple way to understand digital consciousness is that it overwhelms sensory input. It completely takes over. And digital is powerful because you can see it, you can hear it, and you can touch it. And there's never been a mass communication medium that has come at us with so much, on so many different channels of awareness. It also is taking over the inner sense of memory, one of Thomas Aquinas' inner senses, different from Aristotle's 5 outer senses. One of the inner senses is memory. And so most of us have become entirely dependent upon digital, let's say, digital devices, the digital environment, to preserve memory. And there's suddenly a lot to remember. And what I'm suggesting here is that you be a kind of a weather station, that you view your primary, let's say, role, that's not really a good word for it, function, that's not really a good word, that sounds really computery, F2, F3, but I think you get what I mean. Maybe spiritual orientation, psychic orientation, as paying attention to what is going on in the background. And by that, I do not mean the things that people are saying you're supposed to worry about. That is content. That is foreground. I'm suggesting going much deeper into the sublime, looking at the changes that have come through the world in the past however many years, asking yourself how this has shaped you and how you have become a different person in a relatively short time, or your consciousness has taken a different shape in a relatively short time. Even if we go back to 2007, the introduction of the iPhone, which changed everything very quickly, or prior to that, let's say before email. Does anyone even remember? And really notice what all this stuff does to you and does to everyone apart from the things that you're being told to worry about. Because that's really what most of the content of the internet is, right? There's some that's creative, and there's always a good cat video and squirrel running an obstacle course and all that stuff. But that is very much in the minority. And most of what we're absorbing through the online environment is fodder for more and more and more fear. And there's a reason for this. And what I'm suggesting is that you go beneath the surface and understand something about why it's so powerful. By the way, the power of the internet as a psychic influence comes from the thing that is the most invisible of all, including being invisible to the developers. It would seem to be invisible down to everyone except maybe the deepest level of hardware architects who are designing these motherboards and designing circuits, which is zeros and ones, which is very much a Gemini thing, because Gemini inherently implies polarity and dualism. And so if you're wondering why everything's flying out into these radically polarized positions, it's worth considering that there's a lot of zeros and ones influencing people, and we're becoming like them. Another major theme of our time, and I think especially for you, with Uranus entering your sign in the middle of the year, is going to be staying in close contact with your humanity. This will feel like bucking every trend in existence, but it is the most important thing that you can do. You are very sensitive to influences that are inherently dehumanizing. And this is an environmental sensitivity like being allergic to pollen. These influences, these essentially robotizing influences, they have a way of getting into you. And here again is why the environmental sensitivity of Sedna is important, and why it is going to be very helpful to understand the influence that Uranus, which will be transitioning into your sign in between mid 25 and early 26 and stay for 7 years, is going to have on you. So this is a warm-up year for Uranus in Gemini, but I suspect there will be certain very observable accelerations and very observable shifts in patterns, some of which are going to be coming from Pluto in your fellow air sign Aquarius, and we will get there. I want to take Pluto up as one topic, but there is nothing that shakes things up quickly like Uranus. And this is something that has many positive effects, including freedom from the familiar. If things have been a certain way for a long time in your life, now you'll have influences that will help you kind of shake things up and get things moving. There's also a profound element of personal reinvention with Uranus entering your sign. And while this is still some months off, it is vibing in currently. Now, prior to this, going back to about 2018-19, Uranus has been in your 12th place, which is Taurus. And this is not easy. It's not easy because it's agitating. It's not easy because also it's like spiritually agitating. But Taurus, wherever it lands, will have a physical component. And so you may have been experiencing mysterious changes in your physical body, changes to your senses, changes to your sleeping patterns, changes to your dream time experiences, and a shift in how you perceive everything that comes from the very, very deep background of Taurus, which is the 12th place, right before yours, is called the 12th place. And so this has had you under quite a bit of pressure. And one of the benefits of an outer planet leaving the 12th and entering the first is a sense of relief. But you have a while before you get there. And I would propose that rather than seeking relief from this pressure, that you tune into the pressure, that you tune into this invisible realm and tune into the messages that your body is sending you. Because these are very important, and I think that they represent a dimension of communication with yourself that you will miss once Uranus enters your sign and becomes a much more overt, accelerating factor, kind of a coming with a huge amount of energy to it. And as I've emphasized in the written reading, discipline and focus with that energy are very important. It's almost like you're being given all the energy of a small child or black belt in Kung Fu, and you need to do that Kung Fu thing of focusing and directing your total chi force, which is going to jump and call on you to respond with awareness, maturity, and discipline. Because if you don't, you're suddenly going to have this power to throw lightning bolts, and you won't know how to do it. But that does not diminish the power itself. Around the time that Uranus enters your sign, Jupiter moves into your second place. This is one of the best transits there is, because it will help you stabilize your financial situation. You're going to need this to be able to manage the changes that you want to make. And Jupiter is going to bring both a touch of wisdom to your financial affairs, and also the potential for expansion, and also a sense of independence. The second place is about what is yours. It's also about how you feel about yourself. And I would propose that one of the gifts of this transit is going to be the revelation that how you feel about yourself really influences your entire experience of life. Your entire journey is influenced by this reflexive idea of how you feel about yourself, and that is likely to show up with a sense of catching up with yourself, because you have done. I can see from other factors, it is likely that you have made tremendous strides in actually cultivating respect for the person who you are. This does not obviate all need to make adjustments and changes. When you notice that it is time to make a change and there's something that you don't really think you want to proceed forward with, but it is with that respect that you actually do make the changes. So those come from somewhere. And what I'm suggesting here is that you have built up a kind of a reservoir of strength in a way that is based on a cultivation of self-respect. And Jupiter is going to remind you all at once how well you've done and will give you a boost in this area. It's a very difficult topic for we who are alive in the 20th and 21st centuries, particularly because society is largely driven forward by these media devices that make us susceptible to messages, and the messages are all almost entirely about inadequacy. And so we're constantly having to fend off both an environment that promotes an experience of inadequacy and all the messages on top of it that can become these voices in our minds. Now, on the topic of finances, you have just been through a transit that began in 2008, and that is Pluto in Capricorn in your eighth place. And you may have been one of the most directly impacted by the financial shenanigans of 2008, which involved the TARP bailout. This is now ancient history and all but forgotten. I'm reminded every time I go into my bank, because around this time I switched banks that Planet Waves used and put our money into a non-TARP bank, a bank that's mainly headquartered in Canada. But society was kind of smashed in 2008. This is the last year of the Bush-Cheney administration. Terrible wars raging and massive shifts in the economy, particularly around things like mortgages, mortgage-backed securities, and by extension, all securities. And why I mention all this, these financial instruments, is that's all eighth house stuff. And so you were forced to personally adapt to many of these things, even if you were not aware that that's what you were doing. And so under the kind of regime of Pluto and Capricorn for you, there has been forced on you or pushed on you or kind of made mandatory in some way, because that's always, you know, Pluto's main mode of action. Changes in the way that you invest in others, others invest in you, and all forms of shared finance and matters related to taxation. This kind of transit can be very difficult when it comes to marital situations, which are shared financial situations. And it is likely that if you went through any kind of a split up in relationship in the past 15 years, that the dust may be settling still, but I suggest that you operate fully under your new policies and that you make an effort to clean up any remaining debris or influence or impact from that era. There's other kinds of financial partnerships the eighth house implies, but really it starts with the in-laws and the financial consummation of relationships. So Pluto has done a lot here, and it's likely that there's very little that was the same as it was in 2008. The stories are legion of how much is not the same, and all you need to do is look at the world that we live in. That said, I want to both caution you and also let you know that something may be available through this, which is what I've been calling the Family Hunger Games cluster, which really means deep family influence from the background still remains in your eighth house. And the message of this is fairly straightforward, I think, in the eighth house, which is to make sure that you recognize when, exactly when, you're being influenced by so-called information or karma entering from past generations. Now, you may want some of this, but you're definitely not going to want other parts of it. And so when you are making a decision, particularly a financial decision, And you have some ideas about that. The question is, where and from whom are these ideas coming? So, moving on to our main topic, which is your vocational life. And vocation, by the way, means calling. The word vocation is from the same root as vocal, calling. This is normally expressed in houses 6 and 10. 10 is the higher level of aspiration, the long arc of one's professional or vocational trajectory, important actions taken, relationship to authority, and the gradual acquisition of a reputation as a resource. It's not just this cool thing. Your reputation is a resource that will make it possible for you to do more. This has been, I reckon, quite difficult to get a handle on things with Neptune in Pisces. Neptune entered Pisces, thinking around 2011, 2012. And having Pisces as a factor in a house associated with business and with tangible, measurable calling is challenging in this world that generally does not reward the kinds of soft and spiritual and creative and gently luminous things that Pisces stands for. Like Pisces is oceanic, and it's associated with Venus and also with Jupiter. There's generous quality to Pisces. There's a really infinite well of creativity in Pisces. And the business world is like, you know, let's make an app and get rich. Let's sell as many people this form of a bullshit security and make a lot of money, and we'll commodify the American dream, so on, so on, so on. So you have a completely opposite approach to this. And if it's any help to know maybe, you know, why you have not necessarily had the easiest time adapting to an ordinary structured business environment, it's because that's not really particularly what you want. Of course, you have the ways that you can get in. Capricorn in the eighth means you do have a very good head for business, and that you will tend toward a conservative approach, you know, given the option to do so. But Pisces in the 10th is what you're reaching for, reaching toward. And with Neptune here, it has made it very difficult to see and to tune into just specifically what that is. What is your highest vision? And so it's not like you haven't had a highest vision. It's just been difficult to see. It's been a little bit, it's been a little foggy there, and it's still there. And it also, you also may have found yourself being more idealistic than circumstances seem to permit or call for. But that does not change the basic fact that you want an idealistic and creative approach to you know what you do and what you are known for. There have been a number of phases of Neptune going through Pisces. We're now in the last one. And in this last phase, the emphasis is going to shift into Aries, your 11th place. Now, the 11th is also a very important place for professional development because it's really where professional reputation and achievement is expressed. It's a much more social house than the 10th. It's a more informal house, and you are also more naturally able to interact in a way that is socially tangible. The problem with Pisces is that it can lack tangibility. There's a side of you, a strong one, that really needs tangible things. You know, being able to describe, you know, what works. Difficult with Pisces, especially Neptune in Pisces. And the emphasis moves into Aries. And this is going to be happening quite strongly over the year that, well, it's this 18-month year. And so one of the things that I see here is the expression of a real-world experiment. This is very daring astrology. There are going to be two conjunctions in Aries. And as I've said many times, the location of Aries in any chart is my sense of where you're going to seek the most growth. It's about self-actualization, self-expression, and really grooving on the process of I am as a kind of a transitive verb. I am becoming. Right? It's not just I am, because that implies a static quality. But really, the movement from one sense and state of being to another. Chiron Eris is going to be profound here. And the influences in Neptune, and sorry, in Pisces with Neptune there, and then Aries, all caution us about this digital fog that we are in. And though I don't say it very often, part of the kind of delusional nature of the internet and the consciousness that it creates and the weird expectations that people have and their tendency to aggression in subtle ways, and some quite overt, has been aided and abetted by Neptune in Pisces. And Neptune's still going to be there, but what happens when it goes into Aries is that suddenly this tangibility factor goes up quite radically. That it's going to be less easy to be in unconscious, unintentional denial, and more likely that you are going to say, okay, this is the weather. This is the nature of the wind and the tide and the condition of the land and the heat and the, you know, the temperature and all this. And so the 11th is certainly an outer environment, but it's one where you're quite comfortable in because of the Aries connection. And so here we reiterate the environmental theme of Sedna in your sign. I mean, you really want to be like the, you know, the fisherman described in the book Gift of Unknown Things. I think he lives on an island called Nustarian, which is a fictionalized version of what I suspect is a real place. And he jumps off the side of the boat and goes underwater. And he can hear the fish. He can hear what direction the fish are in because he can hear them swimming. And then he says to where to go. And that's you. You need to be able to go under the water and hear the fish and be in the air and hear the birds and be on the land and, you know, hear the horses coming. So environmental sensitivity is huge. Now, what is likely to happen is a lot of very fast movement in the various environments of the Earth. I mean, fortunately, Uranus entering Gemini is delayed a bit from the events of the spring, and the spring is going to spring here in the Northern Hemisphere in a way we've not ever seen before, or may think like, wow, when has anything like this ever happened? And so you, I think, will find your most viable professional, vocational, and business opportunities by being aware of the changes that are going on, by observing and by seeing openings and by doing this thing that you are very good at, which is a kind of communication collaboration, which is getting conversations going, and which is about getting groups together, even small groups, being aware of the groups that exist in the form. It's a whole new dynamic in the digital age with Pluto entering Aquarius, and that's going to kind of resurface in Aries as these many changes start to happen. And what we've got going on in this very social place in your life where you're very much yourself because you have Aries there is Neptune enters, Saturn enters, and then this weird thing I don't mention very often but love dearly called Borsisi enters. Borsisi, an outer planet, a creature of the 90s orbiting our sun. One of the reasons it's so exciting to have Borsisi involved in this transition from the end of Pisces into the beginning of Aries is that it speaks to the condition of Saturn and Neptune, which is so much about belief and belief being persuasive and believing something, and then as a consequence of that, thinking it's true. This is mostly how people think. If I believe it, it's true. So it's not even a belief at that point. It's just basically a completely misguided perception, even if it is a perception, because a lot of beliefs are not based on any perception, meaning sensory data at all. And so there is a very high need for everyone, but you may serve this role for others, so you have to serve it quite well for yourself, which is to know the difference between knowing and not knowing, between believing something and understanding something. And both Saturn and Neptune speak of an investigative process, an inquiry that is as passive as it is active, with the passive part being the receptive, the listening, the observation over time. And I will repeat that the thing that you want to keep teaching yourself is the difference between believing and knowing. If you know the difference between believing and knowing, which implies the difference between knowing and not knowing, you're a titan. You're one of the most brilliant people walking around on the planet, because the crisis that the entire planet is in right now is that the distinctions between these things is being blurred, with the end result being that anyone who wants people to believe something merely needs to pound them hard enough for enough days, and they will get their result. And so you the sense of a probe into all of these levels is very important. All these environments is very important. And if you can be a probe and you can follow your own feedback, if your feedback loop is really strong and you are listening to it and listening to the repetition and listening to the variation, you will know what to do. You will know what to do. Now, one thing that is important in this environment is that you notice sexual attraction. Pay attention to who is attracted to whom, who is attracted to you, who you are attracted to. I understand that in the case of married and monogamous or supposedly monogamous people, the even mere discussion of attraction is taboo. And I'm saying this is a taboo that needs to be lifted for the sole purpose of your having full access to your navigational capacities. One of the hideous things in our time is that there is basically a law against heterosexual attraction right now. There has been this agenda with almost total success forced on people to make us think that the only appropriate attraction is same-sex attraction. And I say, and have always said, the more power to those same-sex couples or groups or whatever they want to do. However you choose to love and whoever you choose to love, you should have the same rights and privileges as everybody else. But that specifically does not imply that others lose their rights. Now, there are things that are blurring this whole matter. This whole vast crisis of identity, the gender-confused children, the transsexuality industry, etc., etc., etc. This is all a manufactured product. This is not some natural or organistic thing growing up, bread mold. It is all being forced upon us. And so what is lost in that environment is a dimension of, and a very important dimension, of sexual polarity that is the underlying basis of all creativity. And I'm not saying that gay people are not creative. I mean, you don't need to look far to find some of the most creative people in the universe being some form of homosexual. My own personal way show, or Brian Eno included, and Patrick Walker, and all kinds of gay people have held up a very bright torch for me, but they were doing what was right for them. And nobody told them they had to do that. And furthermore, they were likely, depending on their age, told they could not do that, and they realized that they could. Okay, so now we've flipped the script, and what we're seeing now is trepidation among those who experience attraction to people of the, what has previously been called, in previous generations, the opposite sex. And by the way, it's important to communicate this to your children and to not take gender dysphoria so seriously. No 9-year-old should be taken seriously when they say that they're a girl in a boy's body. Sorry, but there's too much growth that has to happen, like approximately the rest of the first Saturn cycle out to about age 29, I think, before anyone really has a sense of who they are and genuine confidence based on that sense of who they are. Okay, so the interesting things about the entire realm of professional development for you is that the shift is out of the houses where we normally look for this, rather than into the the houses where we normally look for this. So, for example, planets migrating from the 10th into the 11th. That's interesting. This suggests I don't want to say cashing in, but let's just say collecting the accrued benefits of confronting the persistent mystery of your calling. Pluto going from the 8th to the 9th, Capricorn to Aquarius. Well, the 8th in Capricorn, very businesslike. It's all about contracts and bank loans and so forth. Well, Pluto is now leaving this realm, along with two other centaurs, Amicus and Aureus. That's quite a lot of emphasis. And in one place, joining Centaur Curriculo, who's been there for a while. And this, again, emphasizes the social rather than the transactional. The 8th and Capricorn can be very transactional. And this is the theme going on over and over again. 10th house, a bit Capricornish, shifting into Aries, the 11th. Capricorn itself, 8th house, very businesslike. Dowry, wills, legacies, and inheritance, et cetera, going into the 11th place. Sorry, the 9th place. But the 11th sign, Aquarius. So this is a big emphasis on 11th house and 11th sign for you. This is so natural to you that you're likely to, I really hope I'm right when I say this, to find yourself in a world where, not only do things suddenly make sense, but the way that you can work the territory makes sense. But the image of, just always remember the old man in Nustarian, because this culture lived on fish, paddling the boat out, you know, a couple of miles out into the ocean, and then jumping off the boat, sinking into the water, and listening for which way the fish are. Okay, so another very important house related to vocation is the 6th, and unlike the 10th, which tends to have a long story arc, the 6th is quotidian. The 6th is what you do every day. It's, you know, when you get, unless you're like the chief executive, but frankly, even the chief executive gets up in the morning and, you know, rinses off and, you know, puts on dress, you know, appropriate clothing for their role that day, and walks into an office generally and greets an administrative assistant or secretary and has to enter the 6th place of daily service, daily work. You have Scorpio here. What's so interesting about Gemini is that you have water signs associated with work, activity, and achievement. And this, you know, right out of the gate, not only implies, but informs us that what you do has to be a bit visionary, it has to serve, and there has to be a pleasure element involved. And this will hold for Scorpio in the 6th place. This is calling for deep emotional connection to the work that you do. You cannot, and even if the work itself is somewhat boring, it is the emotional connection that makes the work relevant. And you've got Scorpio here, and this is about depth. You do not want anything wimpy. You want challenge in your work. You want multiple level puzzles and the element of psychology is very important. Gemini, ideal, I think, all factors being counted, we'd have to evaluate that, but it's kind of like the solar chart of Gemini is the perfect chart for an HR person, except for the fact that HR can be kind of boring. It's more like casting director. That's real fancy HR, right? This is where you get to combine the function of making people have the right job and a creative vision. And I don't know if you genuflect to casting directors in the movies that you like, but when I've seen a good film and the name of the casting director is flashed on the screen, I want to get up on the chair and hoot, holler, and cheer, because I know that the director's vision is brought into form by casting. This is you. And it taps into all of the resources that you have, the personal resources that you have. Now, there's two notes, one very optimistic and one note of caution. The optimistic note is that you are a natural gathering point when it comes to the quotidian daily work environment. That the office or whatever is not the same without you. That your presence shifts the energy in the whole place. Like the party doesn't start till you get there. Well, the work doesn't start till you get there. And this is not necessarily because you're cracking a whip, although I suspect that you have one that you know how to use, but rather because you provide a vibe into the space. And I suggest you exploit this. This is Apollon in Scorpio. This is very, very good for any form of commerce and the development of commerce. And it also draws, it is an attractive force as well as an assertive force. The cautionary note is with Poseidon, another one of these weird points without a body that I seem to be using more and more. It is essential that you beware of propaganda. What comes to mind is, all of a sudden, we woke up one day. I don't know what day it was. And everybody was yammering about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, I think is what it stands for. The biggest crock of horseshit ever is purely a power tool to get a result, A, other than the intended result, and it is slowly emerging that this as a priority completely fails. DEI is the opposite of, say, for example, meritocracy. The best person should get the job, including that purple guy over there or the girl with yellow spots. If they're the best person for the job, they should get the job. That's it. That includes you. The propaganda model is saying, well, there's a better way to do this, and we're just going to, we haven't seen enough, people of color, the top brass of the City of New York Police Department, and now they're all getting arrested. Oh, wow. There's some DEI for you. So, not to cast aspersions on anyone, like Caucasians or something like that, but there are always, as this woke philosophy starts to go through its death throes, it's already starting. There are going to be, I think, various different new traps sprung on people. We just don't know what this Chiron-Eris conjunction is going to bring. The last time we had this, and it happens twice in Aries, because Eris is in Aries for about 130 years. Chiron takes a little over 50 years to orbit, and so therefore for every trip that Eris makes through Aries, which only happens, the last time was when the Gutenberg printing press was invented. That was like in the 1400s. Chiron comes through twice, and the last time it did that was in 7071. when we suddenly found ourselves under the hypnotic spell of identity politics, and the movements all splitting up into their own essentially aggrandized self-interest. And I suspect there will be more of that. And when that is going on, and when the propaganda is coming in fast and furious, and the threats are coming in fast and furious, and when it never seems like it was easier to get deplatformed or to have a tweet that you wrote like in 1980 before Twitter was even invented used against you, it takes some guts to think for yourself and to make decisions based on your own understanding of what is right and what is true. And you're always going to consult others. I'm not meekly suggesting that you have any trace of a unilateral decision-making tendencies. To the contrary, I would imagine that your decision-making style is more oriented on a consensus and collective model. But that's a thing to watch out for, because the collective and the consensus model have been veering a long way away from the person who's best at this gets to do it. And what I'm seeing here is there's this connection that I've drawn. It's most of the charts. It's shown in yours in an orange line that connects Neptune and this weird thing that looks like Pisces turns sideways, which is Poseidon. And this is a warning to be conscious of a direct pipeline, like a hotline, like the red phone hotline, from the propaganda artists, whatever they're selling this week, whatever the new cool thing is to fuck up your head, and to say, oh, okay, I heard that phone ring. I know what that one is. I don't need to listen to that. The last 15 phone calls that came through on that line have been highly misleading. I think we'll let the answering machine pick up this time. A couple of more bits. The fifth house for you is Libra. And all the air signs are going to be activated now. Pluto and Centaur is entering Aquarius. That's here to stay. Sedna, Jupiter, Uranus, taking turns, and then, well, long turns. Jupiter's passing through town, but Sedna, Uranus, long-term visitors, that's going to light up Libra. And Libra for you is quite a beautiful thing, because Libra is in itself one of the most creative signs of them all. You can just tell from, I'm fond of when art impresses me or music impresses me. I want to check out what sun sign the person is, and I keep discovering very, very talented Libras who you might not suspect walking down the street. You know, it's like the best models are going to look a little waify and introverted walking down the street unless they're like in character, and then you put them into the studio environment, you turn on the lights, and suddenly they are blazing. This is Libra. And for you, Libra is a creative studio. It is the art studio that you take with you everywhere. And consistent with so many other things about your chart, Libra is relational. And it is, for you, right now, the relational means gaining a mastery of the language that you use to relate your ideas. There's a lot of people with really good ideas. And where they go is they often do not have the ability to form the concepts that make them accessible to other people. And so following along the theme indicated by all this Aries in the 11th and all this Pluto and Centaur in Aquarius in the 9th, about your vision, and even activity in the sixth, which is about kind of a brilliance, practice conveying your ideas to people. Not all Geminis are extroverted. Almost all Geminis are very good conversationalists when you get them going. But not all Geminis are extroverted. And I'm suggesting that you be more extroverted with others, if no other reason, well, you know, to have company, but for the purpose of practicing conveying your ideas. It helps to have a lot of practice conveying your ideas, to be able to find the words, to get it down to a sentence. And if somebody likes that sentence, you're sure to have another sentence. And where we see this, by the way, also playing out is in the Mars retrograde that's going on between Leo and Cancer. And I'll end on that note because it's happening now. It's a thing that is going to have another peak in very early January and continue in some form into the spring. And it is almost like a invitational round before we get into the big game of spring 25 into spring 26. And that too, you see, the third is house of ideas, Leo, for you. Cancer is the house of your values, second house. And so here you get to thread a couple of needles at once. And if you view your life as a walking probe in the environment, and walking art studio is another way to think of that, but you know that your role is to be sensitive. Part of that is practice in expressing yourself, and if you don't get it right, you just keep going. You try it again, and you rewrite the thing, and you if the marketing campaign fails, you gather all the information you can from the marketing campaign, and then you turn it into a success by finding the one thing that works. And it takes a lot of words to be succinct, to pare those words down to the ideas that really move and which open the possibilities for you. And far as I'm concerned, there are quite a few right now. So, you know, practice juggling lightning bolts and your public speaking skills. And I look forward to seeing you somewhere else around the dial. Signing off from Kingston on December 23rd, a Monday at 8:44 in the morning. Lots of love. And bye for now.